Hello and welcome to Spotlight. The Vienna talks between Iran and the P4 plus one group of countries over the revival of the JCPOA have been paused at the request of the EU foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, who tweeted that a final text is essentially ready and on the table and proposed a temporary halt to the talks due to what he called external factors. Iran says the pause can provide a momentum for resolving the remaining issues and a final return to the negotiations, adding that no external factor can affect the parties' joint will to go forward for a collective agreement. Iran has time and again stressed that Washington needs to make a political decision to ensure that Tehran's basic demands are met. To get further details on the decision by the EU foreign policy chief, we're now joined by our correspondent, Homa Lezgi, who's with us from the Austrian capital, Vienna. Homa, what does this pause mean?
Yes, Paradio. So today, I think we heard a lot. We heard the comments from the EU coordinator, Enrique Mora, when he addressed reporters and delivered a kind of statement saying, again, that this is because of external factors, as Mr. Josep Borrell said, and we are going into these pause with a hope that we can come back, he said, within days. That's the hope, which was also voiced by the Chinese ambassador when he talked to the media, that they can come back and get this done. Now, what we're hearing is I'd like to point out the comment made by the Russian ambassador, Mikhail Ulyanov. He said that he wants to make it clear that Russia is not the sole party on whose decision the conclusion of the talks depends. He said that he wants to stress on this fact that there are lots of players involved here. It's not just Russia. Russia is only one of the participants of these negotiations. There are the interests of various parties, and there are issues that are related specifically between Iran and the U.S. and fall into that context and need to be settled between them. And he was saying, basically, you should not assume that the future or fate of these talks and their conclusion depend solely on Russia and Russia's decisions. I'd just like to also point out to a tweet from the U.K. representative lead delegate in the talks. She said that she believes a fair and comprehensive deal is on the table, is ready for conclusion, and that the Iran and the U.S. have worked hard to resolve their issues, and that the E3, in her words, are ready to conclude these talks now. However, the external factors, in her words, must be resolved in the next few days if we want to make that happen. But this is the position that the Europeans have been giving, both, I think, Americans in various briefings that they've had, and also sources close to the Iranian team, however, have been saying that there are still unresolved issues between Iran and America when it comes to the scope of sanctions that need to be removed and some other issues related to, for instance, economic guarantees, etc. What we are hearing, though, that despite these differences, they're not difficult to overcome. They can be overcome quickly if this pause creates a time for various parties to have the necessary consultations for the Russians, Americans and the Iranians specifically to come up with the decisions that need to be taken, then the negotiations can conclude successfully.
All right, thanks a lot, Homa Lezgi, joining us from the Austrian capital, Vienna. Well, joining us for this edition of the Spotlight, we have journalist Abbas Aslani, who's with us also from the Austrian capital, Vienna. And we have journalist, activist, and political analyst John Bosnich, who is joining us from Belgrade.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, let's start off with Mr. Abbas Aslani in Vienna. Mr. Aslani, it's great to have you with us. The EU foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, has suggested a temporary halt to the talks due to what he called external factors, one being Russia requesting guarantees for civilian nuclear projects related to the JCPOA that they will not be affected by Washington's sanctions on Moscow. How do you perceive this recess in the negotiations, and how critical of a phase have the revival negotiations reached right now?
Well, thank you for having me. In fact, the talks have reached a stage which is very close to an agreement, but they have not been able to make it. In order to finalize the text of an agreement, it seems that all the participants to the deal need to somehow find a common ground. You know, there are two sets of issues. One is that the U.S. has been lengthening the process by not, let's say, trying to abide by the lifting of the sanctions that it is supposed to lift in accordance with the JCPOA. Yesterday, Iranian foreign minister was referring to, let's say, the different and frequent changes in the messages that the U.S. has been communicating to Iran via the Joint Commission Coordinator. And they have been arguing that due to the public opinion pressure in the United States, they cannot make the decision on lifting the sanctions. So in that case, Iran will not have motivation to return to the full compliance with the nuclear deal, because Iran's, let's say, main reason to make the deal has been to economically benefit from the JCPOA. So one issue is related to the sanctions and the scope of sanctions and the quality of lifting those sanctions as well. As one senior European diplomat put forth today, was that they will have some further discussions and negotiations over the picture of how those sanctions need to be lifted. But on the other hand, recently we have been hearing some, let's say, remarks by Russian officials on receiving a written guarantee from the Western parties that the current and future EU and US sanctions, meaning over Ukraine, will not impact Russia's relations with Iran. That's why we are hearing that the European officials, as well as the American ones, they are referring to that demand as an external factor. They say that the Russian position is irrelevant to the JCPOA, and they cannot, let's say, ensure that the Iran's bilateral relations with other countries, or let's say, can, let's say, be guaranteed. But, you know, the Russian argument that the other sanctions must not impact, let's say, relations with Iran when it comes to economy or nuclear cooperation,
okay,
that's correct. But also on the other side, we have the U.S., let's say, lack of decision on lifting the sanctions. What is important that is to return to the, let's say, terms of the deal based on the text of the original deal, as well as the United Nations Security Council Resolution 2231.
Sure.
And I think this can be maybe the perspective that has been important to Iran.
Let's bring in Mr. John Bosnich, who's joining us from Belgrade. Mr. Bosnich, Iran says that Russia's request can bring a new topic to the agenda of the talks as an unanticipated component, but the main obstacle to the negotiations is the lack of a U.S. political decision to accept Iran's demands. What do you think is the main obstacle in the way of an agreement?
The U.S. government is in a state of semi-paralysis now because of the conflict in Ukraine, and this is perhaps the best example of where Biden's difficulty in keeping up to date on government affairs is crippling the U.S. operations. I would expect that during the crisis in Ukraine, the United States is going to try to buy for time, because the last thing they want to do now is add another confrontation and another problem to their plate. I expect that you should see the United States delegation delaying, trying to buy time, and trying to slow down the entire process for at least the next 3 weeks.
Mr. Aslani, a major question here is what assurances can be given that another U.S. administration doesn't come along and leave the deal again, just like the Donald Trump administration did, basically asking, should the U.S. or can the U.S. be trusted?
Well, there have been different discussions on different types of guarantees that can be given to Iran. However, the American administration have been resisting, let's say, against giving those guarantees. Earlier discussions were made on, let's say, presenting political, let's say, guarantees, or we have also had discussions on economic guarantees as well as the legal ones. For example, there have been examples on, let's say, what the Congress can do. It's somehow difficult to imagine that they would give a guarantee, but on economic ones, that if in case, let's say, any U.S. administration leaves the deal, the companies will have a period of time to be able to somehow to prepare their departure, or let's say, giving some announcements politically that they won't leave the deal. But one of the most important, I can say, guarantees can be inherent guarantees, which is in fact the reversibility of Iran's nuclear potential and program, meaning that that can work as a potential leverage that in case any party, most specifically the United States, leaves the deal, Iran can return and resume its nuclear activities at the earliest time and as quick as possible. So this could be more, practical guarantee. There has been discussions on that. I mean, some relative progress has been made. But it seems that, you know, the Americans, you know, they have not been able to make, let's say, serious actions vis-a-vis this issue. We have to see till the end that, to see what is the, let's say, actual guarantees that are provided by a likely agreement. But I would say that the inherent guarantee can be the most important one, which can be followed by, or let's say, accompanied by economic guarantees as well as the political one.
John Wozniak, an analyst we spoke to here on Press TV, said that Tehran believes the U.S. wants to keep parts of the sanctions in place in order to use them as leverage to draw concessions from Iran over its regional influence and military capabilities. Do you see it in that light as well?
Absolutely. That is standard U.S. policy. The United States considers itself to be literally above the law. And when they enter into negotiations on any topic, they then have a kind of a strategy meeting in Washington in which they determine what other factors could be brought to bear. And that covers all forms of trade, that covers transportation, that covers regional communications and information transfer. So Iran has been targeted for years by the United States. The United States does not want to be friends with Iran, and the reason for this is because the U.S. policy towards Iran is largely governed by the Israel lobby in Washington. And Israel has as an objective the sidelining and the weakening of Iran. If Iran is allowed to have a good, solid nuclear energy program, it works against the interests of Israel as a regional hegemon, and therefore against the interests of America as the global hegemon.
Mr. Aslani, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, says that Iran will not budge over its regional presence or its nuclear progress vis-a-vis the United States or any other power simply to protect itself against sanctions. If you may unpack those comments for us.
Well, Iran's influence or presence in the region has been source of power for the country, and this power has, let's say, created a deterrence for the country in order to deter some likely invasions against Iran, as well as it has, if that has deterred any invasions against the country, it means that it has been a cause for established peace and security in the region as well. Because if there is any war in the region, This can, let's say, bring damages to other parts of the region. This can be a fire. This can put region maybe on fire. So if these, let's say, potentials and these this deterrence has stopped a likely war, so this is in benefit for, in benefit of Iran, and this is also, let's say, this can benefit the region as well. On the other hand, you know, it is said that the U.S. as well as the West has been trying all along from the past till now to keep some sanctions in place in order to not to let Iran to benefit from the lifting of the sanctions. So the benefit Iran can enjoy can be partial. So those remaining sanctions or the structure of the sanctions, if kept in place, they can be used as a leverage for future negotiations or talks on region, on Iran's missile capability, and other areas as well. So that's why if Iran, let's say, makes compromises on its regional issues, on its defense capabilities, this will empty Iran's hands in any negotiations, even in the nuclear negotiations that are taking place. So Iran wants to make sure that it has its own tools in the its foreign policy toolbox, as well as, let's say, the power to protect itself against the foreign pressure. So that's why Iranian leader, I think, is emphasizing on the importance of the Iran's presence in the region as a source of national power and as a source of, let's say, deterrence in the region, and this can be a source for peace and stability as well for Iran and the region itself.
John Voznich, on that note, according to the leader, the U.S. propositions that Iran needs to reduce its defense power as to not provoke the enemies are extremely naive and amateurish. He said such ideas have been raised in the past but turned down every time. Ayatollah Khamenei said it would be a grave mistake for Iran to back down on its stance and it would hurt Tehran's political power. The question is, why is such a request even on the table from the United States and its allies?
That's very simple. The United States is the global bully. They pretend to be the global policemen, but actually they are a global bully. And the United States operates a protection racket, where if you come to terms with the United States, they give you some minimal ability to survive, but they make sure that you don't become independent of them, and they make sure that all of your business has to go in a manner that they can monitor and control it. I believe, and I believe most political advisors and most political analysts would say that Iran is playing the exactly right game here by standing by its sovereignty, by pointing out that the United States is no longer in the position to swing its might around, especially with the situation in Ukraine, and this may provide Iran an opportunity to finally escape from what is in effect international blackmail by the United States.
Abbas Aslani, the Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Ali Shamkhani, believes that the Vienna talks are becoming more complicated by the hour because the U.S. is actually refraining from making a political decision. Is Washington serious, in your opinion, or does it have ulterior motives regarding the revival of the deal?
Well, Americans, they have been, let's say, claiming to clinch a deal as soon as possible, and they have been demanding Iran and other parties to do so. But in action, what we have been seeing that they have been, let's say, protracting the process by somehow changing their messages, changing their stances, or at least, let's say, not being very active in giving the initiatives or proposals at the table. And this indicates that they have not been able to somehow contribute to the process as they were expected to. So as the time goes on, the negotiations can be more complicated, you know, because there are other, let's say, developments happening in the world And maybe one of the issues that we are seeing a Russian demand in the negotiations, which is another issue at the table, is due to the new developments that are evolving and are taking place in the world. So there is no guarantee that we won't have new developments or new situation in the region globally. And that's why I think it can be more complicated. And in the course of the negotiations, not only we do not see any, let's say, good faith from the American side, but look what happened just recently, that Americans seized an Iranian ship. And this contradicts with what is said at the negotiating table. You know, exactly they do the opposite thing that they are supposed to do. They are seizing Iranian ship, but in action they are supposed, and in practice they are supposed to, let's say, lift the sanctions. You know, the words and the deeds do not agree. So, and that's why it is said that maybe the U.S. is not that much serious. And if they want to reach an agreement, first, they have to be ready to, let's say, to return to the full compliance with all terms of the nuclear deal. And they, let's say, actions must meet their words in practice as well.
And one last question for Mr. Bozich before we wrap up the show. How would you rate Europe's performance regarding the JCPOA and its revival? For example, their initial commitments, their stance on the U.S. abruptly leaving the deal. Have the Europeans held up their end in all of this?
The best word to use to describe them in the English language is spineless. They've shown zero backbone, they've shown zero sovereignty, and they've shown zero solidarity with the entire concept of a fair-based negotiations towards a mutually acceptable agreement. I can say that the Europeans in this particular negotiations and in general have shown that they are merely just following instructions from Washington, and they have disgraced themselves in these talks. And I think that Iran has done an excellent job in presenting its case clearly and defending its stance and its sovereignty. If you stay the course, your results will be much, much better than if you cave in.
All right. Thanks a lot, gentlemen. Journalist Abbas Aslani joining us from the Austrian capital, Vienna. And also thanks to journalist, activist, and political analyst John Bozich joining us from Belgrade. And a special thanks to you for staying with us on tonight's Spotlight. It's good night for now.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Dear listeners, hello everyone. Welcome to another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and in this edition, we will try to have a closer look at the 25th chapter, Surah Al-Furqan. First, let's just listen to the verses we're going to talk about in this program, and we'll be back shortly. So stay with us.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
وَقَالَ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا لَوْلَا نُزِّلَ عَلَيْهِ الْقُرْآنُ جُمْلَةً وَاحِدَةً كَذَلِكَ لِنُثَبِّتَ بِهِ فُؤَادَكَ وَرَتَّلْنَاهُ تَرْتِيلًا.
And those who disbelieve say, why was the Quran not revealed to him all at once? Thus it is that we may strengthen thereby your heart, and we have spaced it distinctly.
As you may have been previously with us, dear listeners, we were discussing the 32nd verse of chapter Furqan. وَقَالَ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا لَوْلَا نُزِّلَ عَلَيْهِ الْقُرْآنَ جُمْلَةً وَاحِدَةً كَذَلِكَ لِنُثَبِّتَ بِهِ فُؤَادَكَ وَرَتَّلْنَاهُ تَرْتِيلًا. And those who disbelieve say, why has not the Quran been sent down upon him all at once? Thus it is revealed that we may strengthen your heart by it, and we have rehearsed it to you in slow, well-arranged stages, gradually. In the previous episode, we said that these pretext seekers are used to finding new pretexts every moment. And the thing which is addressed in this verse is that they question why the Holy Quran is not revealed all at once. Why has it been sent down to him on special occasions during 23 years? To which the Holy Quran says, كذلك. This means that we sent down the Quran gradually to make the heart of the Prophet stronger, to make the keeping of the Quran easier. Moreover, the Holy Prophet was illiterate, he did not know writing and reading, so to make him understand the revelation better, the Holy Quran was sent down gradually. In fact, the gradual revelation of the Holy Quran is the factor of continual and permanent relation of the Prophet ﷺ with the source of revelation. This gradual revelation makes him stable in this way. It shows that prophethood is not a temporal matter. Of course, a religion that is comprehensive and enlivened, it has a strong relation with events and occasions. And events and occasions can occur gradually, not instantly. During these 23 years, we had so many verses revealed down by the Almighty Allah because of different events. And one of the reasons they used to bring these pretexts is that it was really difficult for them to avoid prohibitions instantly. To obey all orders and to avoid these prohibitions instantly was really difficult for those common people. And this was one of the reasons that caused them distress and constriction. But they were blind to understand that each and every surah and verse of the Holy Quran is by itself a miracle. It's a gradual revelation that can be seen as a continual miracle. Each miracle soothed the heart of the Prophet ﷺ against the enemy's oppressions. And it is interesting that some of these verses are the answers of the people's questions. So a question must first be raised, and then its answer must be given. Some verses and judgments were descended for a certain period, so a verse must be sent down to annul them first.
﴿ We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In this series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
So, as you can see, there is much difference between revelation of each verse according to special position and instant revelation of all verses, regardless of situations. Anyway, at the end of the verse, it is said, وَرَتَّلْنَاهُ تَرْتِيلًا. We rehearsed it to you in slow, well-arranged stages, gradually. There is one tradition regarding slowly and distinctly reading and recitation of the Holy Quran. The Holy Prophet ﷺ has said, تَرْتِيل is to recite the Quran distinctly, not like reading a poem. When you reach its wits, you stop and you purify your heart and spirit. Your aim of recitation must not be reaching the end of surah. This is what Imam Ali alayhi salam says. He says the purpose of tartil is to stop when it needs full stop and articulation of letters. So when we say we are doing tartil, we say that we are reciting the Holy Quran beautifully and at the same time slowly. It is to stop and to resort to Allah, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says. When we are reciting the verses that are about fire and punishment, we must stop, we must resort to Allah. When the verses about the paradise are read, it is time to pray and ask Allah the heaven. So, it is understood from all these narrations and the words of commentators that tartil is to recite the Holy Quran slowly and in proper order. Reading must be done verse by verse, and these verses must not be mixed. So the one who is listening to us must understand that this is the first verse and this is the second. He must understand. And they must write it down for the next generations, so the future ages can use the light of its guidance and make dark places of their life lighted by the different verses of the Holy Quran. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this program. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me. Worry ends when faith begins.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Back on March 11, 2012, a U.S. Army sergeant horrifically killed at least 16 civilians, including 9 children, and wounded 6 others in Panjwayi district of Kandahar province. Today, Afghans recall the killings as shocking and inhuman, saying they can't forget about the U.S. war crimes in their country.
Around 10 years ago, a terrifying shooting was carried out on my relatives in the Zangawad village in Kandahar. It was like a nightmare. I can't forget it. American forces opened fire on civilians, including children and women. We did protests against the U.S. and didn't let them sweep it under the carpet. Americans should be held accountable for their war crimes in Afghanistan.
Sayed Ishaq Gilani was a former Afghan MP. He led the Afghan team to investigate the Panjwayi mass killing. He denies an individual act, saying it was planned and more Americans were involved.
Throughout our investigation, we found out that there was more than one shooter. We saw 20 footprints of the American forces at the scenes of crimes. The incident was shocking and tragic. It looked like a group of U.S. soldiers had done that. Then they blamed everything on one of their drunk teammates. The U.S. forces threatened the local people not to tell us the truth.
Sardar Muhammad, the lawyer of the victim's family, says that the U.S. Army threatened him and didn't let him pursue the file.
After the mass killing, the victim's family chose me as the lawyer. At a 2 rounds of trial, the American sergeant Robert Bales was sentenced to death, and it was what the family wanted. But before going to the last trial, Americans threatened me because I was insisting on execution of the murderer. I don't know what happened in the last trial, as the Americans selected one of themselves as the lawyer of the victim's families instead of me.
After 20 years of invasion, the U.S. and its allies hastily abandoned Afghanistan in mid-August last year, leaving Afghans with sad and heartbreaking memories. People in Afghanistan associate the U.S. invasion of their country with destruction, night raids, and rights violation. They say the U.S. should be held accountable for its war crimes in Afghanistan. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
At the Palace of Versailles, famed as the seat of absolute autocracy and anti-democracy, the leaders of the European Union met in order to discuss possibly historic reversals of long-standing policies as a response to the conflict between Russia and Ukraine.
The challenge is to leave the summit with a firm declaration that a peak of new sanctions is reached, that they will be applied, and that everyone is ready to move towards the same decisions, such as freezing assets of both the Russian central bank and private banks, sanctions on those close to Europe, and reducing gas purchases.
Russia is the biggest supplier of fossil fuels to the European Union, and the meeting will discuss how to reduce as much as two-thirds of its natural gas needs from Russia within a year. That is expected to be extremely painful for businesses and households, and would force a reversal of green energy policies, which many European politicians have insisted were of apocalyptic importance for many years. One of the key arguments often used to defend the EU is that it is responsible for an era of European peace. But many say the two-day conference may provide the foundations for a new European army.
For the first time, the EU has sent lethal weapons, even though the bloc won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2012. More than half of Europe has already sent arms to Ukraine, further escalating the conflict.
Une forme d'autonomie stratégique.
There needs to be a form of strategic autonomy, which Macron keeps repeating. And if not independence, then less dependence from both Washington and Moscow. The consequences of this conflict will be felt on Europe. So Europe needs to show unprecedented unity and swiftness.
To fund these changes, the leaders are discussing a potentially massive bond sale similar to the bloc's $2 trillion COVID rescue fund, and which they refused to do during the age of austerity. The latest round of Russia-Ukraine peace talks in Turkey failed to make any progress at all. The fallout from the conflict in the Ukraine is provoking massive shifts in historical developments and with a rapidity that few imagine possible. If the two countries can't make peace soon, the world may look very different very quickly. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Nigerians under the umbrella of the Concerned Abuja Indigenes said the Nigerian government's refusal to release the travel documents of Sheikh Ibrahim Al-Zazaki and his wife Zinat is part of the unjustifiable oppression of the Islamic cleric and his wife. The group said Sheikh Ibrahim Al-Zazaki has been brutalized in Zaria in December 2015, resulting in the murder of his six sons and thousands of his followers. They said the Islamic cleric has remained resolute and law-abiding, so there is need for the court to resolve the issue of his travel documents immediately.
Do we expect him dead before the judgment concluded? This is what we are talking about. If the court should keep on delaying, consigning the release of the traveling document, what do we do while the sickness keep on eating the body?
The Abuja Concerned Indigenes said Sheikh Ibrahim Al-Zazaki and his wife Zinat have dangerous levels of lead and cadmium in their blood and needed to be hospitalized. They said delaying the medical trip of Sheikh Zazaki and his wife Zinat is an infringement on their rights.
The Constitution of Nigeria has given every individual a right to express, right of movement, right to medication, right of everything. Socially. So if right has been given to every individual citizen of the country, why is Sheikh being deprived?
A Kaduna High Court had freed Sheikh Zazaki and his wife Zinat since July 28, 2021. The Islamic cleric and his wife had dragged the Nigerian government to court over its refusal to release their passports to go for medical treatment abroad. Danjum Abdullahi, Abuja.
Already struggling with the cost of living crisis, ordinary Europeans are now feeling the pinch at the pump, with the conflict in Ukraine pushing up the already high food and fuel prices. As plans to phase out oil imports from Russia are drawn up, the ripple effects of the Ukraine crisis are being felt across the continent.
Here in London, people are feeling the economic cost of the ongoing military conflict in Ukraine at the gas pump. Prices have been rising steadily since the start of the year and have now hit a record high. And what that means is that it's going to have a knock-on effect on the cost of transporting goods and, by extension, on the already rising cost of living.
Russia is the world's second largest exporter of oil. The EU imports 27% of its oil from Russia, the UK 11%, and the US just 8%. Which is why Europe will feel the effect of the bans far more acutely than the U.S. The EU also plans to slash its dependency on Russian gas by two-thirds this year. That's 26% of their supply.
It's hard, bloody hard, but it's possible if we're willing to go further and faster than we've done before.
But to make it possible, experts say the Europeans will have to make difficult compromises.
For the new government in Germany, actually now saying, actually, we're going to bring back nuclear. Well, that was one of the key things, that they were going to get rid of nuclear completely, very quickly indeed. Then also coal, getting rid of the coal-burning power stations, and particularly those from maybe the using Polish coal, brown coal, which is incredibly dirty.
But could all this have been prevented? While the U.S. and Europe blame Russia's ongoing military offensive in Ukraine for the soaring energy costs, some experts say it's a crisis that could have been averted.
One of the great things about international affairs is to understand not just what you want to achieve, but what the other side wants to achieve. And where's the middle path? Russia generally would want to have a working relationship to protect its security, to make sure its confidence is there, and you know, instead of necessarily having people who are American allies literally a few hundred miles away from your capital. That's something they're not used to. So really understand their nervousness, now try and work out how to deal with it. But we've left it too late.
The new plans will mean less oil revenues for Russia and a faster transition to cleaner energy. But what it also means is a higher risk of inflation and recession across the continent. Saeed Pourreza, London.
Yuan has launched its futures contracts for the first time in the history of its energy exchange market. The futures contracts were launched for the naphtha and methanol trades. According to experts, futures are some very important instruments for the market balance. If other energy carriers, and especially oil, gas, and petrochemical companies, join Yuan's energy exchange on futures platform, Yuan's crude oil and gas is capable enough to be turned into a benchmark for pricing in the region.
As Iran has the largest oil and gas reserves in the world, the pricing benchmark for our gas and oil should not be elsewhere. The fact is that we should have our own pricing reference for our natural gas in the region. We hope that with the launch of futures and cooperation of all companies in the field of oil and gas, such a thing will happen.
Futures are some very important instruments for the market balance. While there are also some strong hedging tools, they provide investment opportunities for those who are seeking the amount of profit more than they can earn in the normal market deals.
Futures contracts are financial contracts obligating the buyer to purchase an asset or the seller to sell an asset at a predetermined date and price in the future.
The launch of futures trade markets at Yuan's energy exchange will contribute to transparency and the predictability of Yuan's economy. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
The Islamic Jihad movement held a national conference for women in the Gaza Strip on the occasion of International Women's Day. The conference, titled Woman is the Icon of Resistance, highlighted the role of Palestinian women in fighting the Israeli occupation and their struggle for freedom and justice. Palestinian women in the Gaza Strip paid a heavy toll during Israel's war on coastal enclave last year. According to human rights groups, the Israeli regime killed 60 women and 22 children in 2021.
We are supporting our women. We called the international, we addressed the international human rights to support our women, asking the international committee to protect the women, to protect the children, to stop the occupation forces against the women in Palestine.
Addressing the conference through satellite transmission, Islamic Jihad Secretary General Dr. Ziad Nakhala praised the role of Palestinian women in their struggle against the Israeli regime for more than seven decades.
Palestinian women will not allow anyone to stop her resistance, consider it to be a red line. Palestinian women share military and political struggle with men. Palestinian women have given a lot for her homeland and pride.
Conference attendees discussed ways of developing new strategies for women to confront the Israeli regime and its illegal practices, especially against women.
Palestinian women today meeting in Gaza to discuss about the role for women, for Palestinian women, and to discuss issues about how to defend the Palestinian in Palestine.
The annual event also tackled ways of bringing international attention to the plight of Palestinian women.
Palestinian women say that they will continue their struggle against the Israeli regime until the liberation of Al-Quds and all of Palestine. Ashraf Shana, Gaza.
Gaza.
United States Secretary of State Antony Blinken wrapped up a visit to the leaders of six European nations, plus a visit with the European Union and Israel's foreign minister, with a closed-door meeting with French President Emmanuel Macron. Washington has just announced a ban on Russian fossil fuels, but Blinken has apparently not convinced the European Union to immediately sever energy ties with their primary supplier. Russia announced they would cut its oil supplies to Europe if they introduced energy sanctions, which would have a devastating economic impact, perhaps globally. In what many say is an effort to avoid peace and increase the likelihood of a major war, Blinken recently announced that NATO members can send fighter jets to Ukraine. The U.S. and Europe have already provided significant military aid to Ukraine and imposed sanctions so potentially sweeping that Russian Federation President Vladimir Putin recently said they were, quote, like a war.
France is not directly concerned in this conflict, and yet they've already overdone it. When their foreign minister declared an all-out economic and financial war against Russia, that is an act of war. However, there's no economic coherence here because Europe completely depends on Russia for gas, petrol, and titanium, while the loss of export sales to Russia would be a catastrophe for European agriculture.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky recently announced that he, quote, understood that NATO is not prepared to accept Ukraine, end quote, which appears to be a concession to one of Russia's primary demands to end its military operation. The risk of expanding the conflict is a major concern, and with Washington giving Russia a cold shoulder since their offensive, Macron has served as the West's primary mediator with Moscow.
Macron has failed in his mediations because he and Germany have not been able to convince Ukraine to respect the Minsk agreements. If Macron had been able to convince Ukraine of this, then things could have been quite different. France should have been able to achieve this, but the United States obviously didn't want it.
Since 2014, some 14,000 people have been killed in Ukraine. Russia's offensive on February 24th has produced almost 500 civilian deaths and nearly 2 million refugees, according to the United Nations. In recent years, many politicians have argued that the European Union is necessary in order to have peace on the continent. However, forming an EU army, sending arms within Europe, and waging a sanctions war which is sure to hurt the Russian people doesn't seem peaceful to many. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Members of Iran's Assembly of Experts have held their second biannual meeting this year. That's the ninth official session of the current assembly, which was elected in 2016.
Members of the Assembly of Experts convene twice a year to review the latest domestic and global issues. This time, Ebrahim Raisi, who's one of the Assembly's members, has participated as Iran's president.
Raisi was invited to highlight his administration's achievements and review the challenges it faces. During this session, Chairman of the Assembly of Experts, Ahmad Jannati, urged President Raisi to take practical steps to address the economic problems of Iranians and improve their livelihood.
We need to improve the livelihood of the less privileged strata. The Honorable President must take steps to make this happen. I hope other members of this cabinet follow suit and help the needy have a better life. This is the least we should do as a duty.
The Assembly of Experts was established in 1983, almost 4 years after the victory of the Islamic Revolution. Its main task is to monitor the performance of the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution. The experts should also elect a new leader in the event of the demise, resignation, or dismissal of the current leader.
The Assembly of Experts was the entity that elected Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei as the new leader after Imam Khomeini passed away in 1988. Not only does it supervise the performance of the leader, but it plays a crucial role in protecting the political establishment.
The Assembly of Experts is currently a body of 88 Islamic jurists. The entity consists of a leadership council and six committees. Members are elected by direct public vote for an 8-year term. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Palestinians rallied on Monday in front of the Red Cross office in Gaza to drum up support for thousands of prisoners held in Israeli jails. Their solidarity action comes as around 450 administrative detainees have been refusing to show up for their military court hearings for the third month in a row. Administrative detainees are denied due process, and their detention orders can be renewed for indefinite periods of time.
For the third month, the Palestinian administrative detainees are boycotting the Israeli military courts in order to protest the administrative detention. And now the Palestinian detainees need all kinds of support by the Palestinian community and the international community.
Palestinian prisoners are also subject to torture and psychological pressure by the Israeli prison authorities, including daily raids and solitary confinement. Currently, some 5,000 Palestinians are languishing inside Israeli jails, including minors and women.
The Israeli administration, they conducted series of attacks and aggression against prisoners, especially women. This gathering asking international community to put pressure to Israeli government in order to facilitate their rights and stop the aggression against Palestinian prisoners.
Palestinian prisoners regularly stage hunger strikes in protest against both the administrative detention policy and harsh detention conditions. Prisoners' advocacy groups have raised the alarm over the inhumane conditions inside Israeli jails.
Nowadays, the situation is going to explode inside Israeli prisons because of the Israeli measures that aimed to break the will of Palestinian detainees and to confiscate their rights.
Experts say Palestinian prisoners will continue to suffer inside Israeli jails as long as the international community keeps turning a blind eye to Tel Aviv's violations of their rights.
Statistics by human rights groups show that the Israeli regime has arrested over 1 million Palestinians since 1967. Ashraf Shana, Gaza.
Joint statement by the diplomatic missions of the Western countries in Islamabad has created an uproar in Pakistan. The statement posted on the social media platforms presses Pakistan to condemn Russia. The statement was signed by the envoys of European countries and endorsed by the U.S. Embassy in Islamabad. The move by the Western diplomatic missions here has drawn strong reaction from the Pakistani government. The Foreign Office has summoned the envoys of the Western countries to tell them that issuing public statements against the host country is not in line with the diplomatic protocols. On Sunday, Prime Minister Imran Khan doubled down on the European ambassadors and made it clear that Pakistan is not their slave.
I want to ask the European ambassadors, did you write such a letter to India? What do you think of us? Are we your slaves? That whatever you say, we will do.
Pakistan has maintained a fine balance in the ongoing conflict between Russia and the West over Ukraine. The reason Pakistan refused to condemn Russia stems from its growing ties with Moscow.
The only thing that I can say from Pakistan's government perspective that Pakistan wants de-escalation. Honestly, Pakistan wants end of the war or end of bombing or end of aggression anywhere for that matter in the world.
Pakistan has remained in the Western camp for decades, but now wants to diversify its foreign policy options. It was because of this reason that despite pressure from the West, Pakistan abstained from the voting on a resolution against Russia at the UN General Assembly session. Kamran Yusuf, Islamabad.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints. I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sayyid Murtaza and Sayyid Mohsen. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the show.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for inviting.
And Sayyid Murtaza, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
So today, when you look at the media all around the world, a type of harsh, violent, barbaric picture is made out of the religion of Islam, especially with the creation of such groups like ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and the suicide bombing, you know, here and there. Especially the people in the West has a wrong view regarding the religion of Islam and the true teachings of Islam. Today we want to talk about this topic, how the religion of Islam can help international bodies.